Okay, we are in Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph, about a third of the way down the page by the two dots, on the next ruling of the Mishnah. The next ruling of the Mishnah says, Dinei Mominus Hatmeis Vataharis. When we're dealing with monetary cases, cases of Tuma and Tahara, who from the judges speaks up first? Who gives his opinion first? We begin from the most eminent judge because of the respect that's due to him, which is not the case on what type of cases? Remember? Capital cases. Capital cases, we want the least prominent, so people should feel free to speak because that's someone's life and death, but otherwise not. So now the Gemara is going to first relate a story and then ask a question from that. But we go from the most prominent one. Amarav, Rav said the following. Ano havoi b'minyona devei Rebbe. I was once involved in a vote, minyona, a minion to count. I was once involved in a vote in the court of Rebbe. And guess who they started with? Uminoi didi havu maschale bereisha. And the count didi with me hava they maschale began bereisha first. They started with me. Now the case doesn't really matter what the case was, but the commentary gives us what the case is anyway. It was a case of an extortionist who forced a landowner owner upon threat of death to sell his land. Okay, it happens sometimes. Now, and the landowner did not reclaim that land within 12 months. Okay, he didn't go to court or whatever. Now, another Jew may purchase it from the extortionist. You can buy it from him. However, the buyer, though, is required to give the original owner 1/4 of the land based on the assumption that the extortionist reduced the price of the land by 1/4 since he acquired it without any payment. Okay, that's basically the law. If a guy gets away, so to speak, with extorting, and the guy didn't say anything, when we find out about it, so you have to give 1/4 of the payment to the original owner. I'm not interested about the mechanics. That just happened to be the case. Clearly a monetary case. That's all you need to know. So Rav relates how he took part in Rebbe's court for the deliberations, leading to this decree. This decree came out of that court case, you see, and was asked to state his opinion first, even though he was not the most eminent judge present. That's the main point of the story. Rav says he was in the court of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, in the Sanhedrin, and this was a financial case, and he was asked to weigh in first. And that's what he just tells the story. So, of course, the Gemara, based on our Mishnah, asks the following question. But our Mishnah says you begin with the biggest rabbi. And obviously, in the court of Judah the prince was the highest one, not Rav. So that's what Gemara is asking on the story that Rav relates. Why was Rav the first one to give his opinion? Amar Rabba Brei de Rava Visema Rabbi Hillel Brei de Rav Avalis. Interesting, I'd never heard that name before. So Rabba, the son of Rava, and some say Rav Hillel, the son of Rabbi Avalis, says, Shiny minyana deve Rebbe. Rebbe's court was different. Why? De kulo minyanehu min hatzad havi maschili. All the deliberations Rebbe Yehuda Nasi's court always started from the side, meaning the less eminent people. Why? If you recall, there's a Gemara that says when Rebbe died, humility stopped. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, as great as he was, led himself with exceptional humility, and therefore he never wanted to be the first one to do the case. So that was like an exception rule. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, in other words, you're right, really should start with the smartest person on the court, as he deserves such respect. That should be, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was Michael on his covet. He gave up on his covet. So you don't learn from Yehuda Nasi's cases. It was an unusual case. Now that we're on this, now I don't know, well, why we segue now, and once we're talking about Yehuda Nasi and how humble he was, we're now going to tell you another famous thing that has to do with last week's Parsha class that we gave. I guess since we're already making statements of Rava, the son of Rava, or some say it's Hillel, the son of Rav Wallace. Okay, so therefore, he says another one, and it relates to Rabbi Yonasi. Famous line, Mimos Moshe Vad Rebbe, from the days of Moshe until Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, which spanned at least around 1,000 years, if not more. Lo Motzinu Torah Ugedula B'makom Echad. We don't find any other person who was alive who had greatness and Torah and greatness in Gedula. So Gedula, here is English explaining, of authority. Can also mean wealth. And authority, wealth, authority usually comes from wealth. Okay? So there is in no generation, in the times of Moshe and the times of Rebbe, was a person who wielded the greatest authority over the Jews. Also, the person who was greatest in Torah knowledge. Moshe, though, was ruler over all the Jews besides being greatest in Torah knowledge. Similarly, Rebbe maintained the position of Nasi, in addition to being the leading Torah scholar of the generation. Okay, so in other words, we're talking about Torah greatness and power. So power, you know, authority, there's a lot of things that go into authority. But listen, people listen to what he says. Now, that could be a factor. Many things could lead into that factor. But mainly saying he's the leader that everybody listens to. And it's pretty unusual that the person who's the greatest Torah scholar can be also the leader that everybody's listening in terms of not Torah, but it's running the country and all the other kinds of stuff that deal with being, like being the king and the greatest Talmud scholar. Usually it doesn't go together. But that, yeah, from Moshe, and the next one was Rabbi Yonasi. The rest of the next number of lines of Gemara is going to say, wait a minute, I think we can come up with other people who between Moshe and Rebbe could fit that bill. Why did we say only from Moshe and Rabbi Yonasi? We're going to have about 10 possibilities. And they're going to say no, and none of those works. Gemara asks, V'lo, are you going to tell me there wasn't anybody between Moshe and Yehuda Nasi? Ha'ava Yehoshua, what about Joshua? He led the Jews after the death of Moshe. He was a great Torah scholar, and he was the leader. So this becomes one of the typical answers. Gemara says, Hava Elazar. Elazar was there, and he was equal to Yeshua in Torah. Elazar is who? The son of Aaron, was the Kohen Gadol. He matched him in Torah scholarship. So even though Yeshua was the authority, the leader, that was true, but he couldn't be said as the top Torah scholar because Elazar was equal to him. We're speaking in a case where the person is the greatest beyond everybody in Torah and also in authority. So that takes out Yeshua.
Who's saying this?
The Gemara.
The
students, whatever, whoever the students are. That was the discussion, that was the conclusion.
So they said he was equal, but they weren't there at the time. How do they know? How do they say
I guess
he was
with,
equal to him? How do they know? I mean, they're making these statements, and
how did they know? Mordechai, how did they know? How did they know when they say that Yeshua was, Elazar was equal to Yeshua? Well, they knew. I don't know. I don't know. But I would assume they gave you an honest answer, right?
I'm sure they gave an honest answer.
This isn't a White House staff briefing, a briefing, you know, where they're spinning it.
It's so subjective.
The rabbis there, I guess, weren't subjective. They knew.
The Torah wrote about them, so they must have been great people.
Say, this one's greater than this one, this one's equal to this one.
I mean, from their writings.
The Gemara knew. I don't know. I don't know how they knew. I don't know. Okay, Gemara continues. Vahava Pinchas. What about Pinchas? Pinchas. After Yeshua and Elazar died, Pinchas was the leader of the Jewish people. So he was the leader, and he was a great Torah scholar. Again, no, they were equal to him. Hava Zekanim. They're the elders who were equal in scholarship, and they give you who they are, such as Asniel ben Kenaz, Boaz. They equaled Pinchas in Torah scholarship as well. Okay. Vav Shaul, what about King Saul, who was the leader for a certain period of time and a great Torah scholar? More answers. The answer is Hava Shmuel, who was greater than Shaul in Torah scholarship. Okay, which that makes sense. Aye, but wait a minute, but didn't Shmuel die before Shaul died? So after Shmuel died, there was a certain period of time where Shaul was the greatest scholar and he was the leader. But didn't Shmuel die? So at that point, from Shmuel's death until Shaul's death, Shaul should have been recognized as great in both areas. So Gemara answers, when we say this rule, we talk about this rule that were great in Torah leadership, meaning the entire time they reigned. That's what it means. So with Moshe, from the beginning that he reigned, he was top in both. Same thing with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Here, Shaul, not in the beginning, when he was king, he was not the biggest scholar, only for part of his reign. And when we say this rule is for the entire reign, that's what the next line says. Kula shnei kamrinan. We meant only that all the years of his greatness has to be, and you don't have all the years. The beginning, when he was the leader, he wasn't the greatest. Okay, it's interesting. It gives you a little pause for thought to not minimize how great Shaul was. Right? We think, he was a lunatic and this and that. You know, so he
went to the witch.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, listen, you can make a mistake. Doesn't mean to say you don't make an error. I mean, Moshe hit the rock in this week's Parsha.
Okay, but
he doesn't get to go to Eretz. But he doesn't get to go to Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't get to go to Eretz Yisrael. Pretty big punishment. Anyway, that's the way it is. Leaders are, you know, can make mistakes. And Shaul had all kinds of cheshbonos. Why he felt he should go to the witch. He felt it was the Jewish people's lives depended on it. And he didn't stomp flippantly just say, I'm going to a witch. He was very concerned that tens of thousands of Jews would die. So he wanted to know. Anyway, let's go on. What about Vahavid David? What about David? David was great in Torah and was a great leader. Gemara says, no, he was. There was still someone greater than him. This fellow, I never heard of this fellow. Vahava Ira Hayoiri. There is a man, Ira, from the place of Yair, that David deferred to in Torah matters. Gemara in Moed Katan relates how David's teacher Ira sat on pillows and cushions when he would teach the rabbis, including David. It's evident from scripture that David referred to Ira. So now you see that Ira Taka now is a Jewish name.
I know there was a Russian. He didn't tell David.
Well, we're going to get to that. He was not as great. Anyway, Ira was bigger than him. Again.
Is he not mentioned in the book of Shmuel?
Ira?
No. Well, I don't know. It seems from Rashi and Shmuel, it appears. So from Rashi, yeah, we didn't. It's a Shmuel Beis. Okay. Anyway, now it's interesting why the Gemara is going to ask the same question asked before and gives the same answer, and you wonder why the Gemara does it. Didn't they already get this idea? You'll see what's going to disturb me here. But then Ira died, and David was still king, and now he was the preeminent scholar. So I don't know why they're asking the question, because they give the same answer. Kula shnei kamrinan, we're speaking about when it was all his years of authority. So I don't know why the Gemara is doing that, because, you know, maybe just so we'll know that Ira died before him, I don't know. Next person, v'ohav Shlomo, about Shlomo HaMelech, clearly was the smartest man who ever lived, and he was also the leader. Interesting. Have a Shimi ben Gera. There was Shimi ben Gera, who was also a great scholar. I guess he equaled him in scholarship. Okay. Okay, they bring a proof how he was a great scholar, whatever. So again, but he was killed. King Shlomo had him executed. So there's years he was without Shimi ben Gera. The answer is Kula Shnei Kamrinan. Again, it has to be the entire years of his rule, and it wasn't the whole entire years. All right, what about, let's move on in history. Hohave Chizkiah. What about Chizkiah HaMelech? Was the greatest Torah scholar and was the leader of the Jewish people? The answer is there was another great scholar that lived at his same time. Have Shevna. There was Shevna, who was greater than Chizkiah in Torah. He had a bigger yeshiva. Remember, that was the big machlokas. What should they do when Sancheriv is laying siege? Should we give in or not? Chizkiah said not. Shevna said yes. But then what happened? Shevna tries to make a peace treaty, and he goes out, and nobody joined him, and then he got killed. So now, till he got killed by Sancheriv. So there was a certain period of time where he was alone. Again, Kula Shnei Kamrinan, we're speaking where he had to have his entire realm. All right, moving on. Vohave Ezra, about Ezra, who brought the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. He was Torah Gedula. Answer is, Have Nehemiah ben Chachiloi. He had a partner, Nehemiah ben Chachiloi, who wielded greater authority, not scholarship, but greater authority. Okay, so that was all the possibilities, but we're still on the topic. So therefore, that's clear. There's a lot. We're close, but no cigar. It was only Moshe, Rabbi Yossi. But hold on. Amar Ravada Barava. Ravada Barava, after we run out all these possibilities, says, Af ani omer, I also say, Mimos Rebbe, from Moshe to Rebbe. Okay, what about after Rebbe? Mm-hmm. What about after Rebbe? You know, okay, we agree. Moshe, Rebbe. But after Rebbe, there's still a lot of people who lived. Is there maybe another person? Let's get a third one. So he says, I say, from Rebbe ad Ravashi. Ravashi, who was one of the two rabbis who redacted the Talmud. Umatzinu Torah Gedula b'makam echad. We don't find any preeminence in Torah and authority in one person. Mordechai was not the greatest Torah leader. He was not the highest one in the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. No, they didn't even ask the question. They didn't even think of asking the question. He didn't have authority, and he didn't have either one. The Jews were in exile, so he didn't have authority. Achashverosh had authority. He didn't have authority. And number two, he was even demoted through the story. So that wasn't, they weren't even consider him, sorry. But now this rabbi's saying, from Rebbe to Ravashi, though, you don't find that. That's what he says. To which Gemara objects. You want to say there was no, again, so we're going to, he said, but there's nobody else. Although there was nobody else, isn't maybe there's somebody in between there? Vaha Havi Huna Bar Nosson. There was a person by the name of Huna Bar Nosson. Who's he? He had a close relationship with the Persian rulers. Hence, neither Ravashi nor Huna Bar Nosson could be said to have possessed both unmatched greatness in terms of scholarship and authority. In other words, Huna Bar Nosson had a certain degree of power, but being close to the Persians, so he wasn't alone. The answer is no, you're wrong. Huna Bar Nosson, Mechev Uchayev with Ravashi. Huna Bar Nosson considered himself subordinate to Ravashi, even though Huna Bar Nosson had certain power, but I guess he deferred it to Ravashi. And therefore, this becomes an interesting added clause that most people never say. Everyone knows the clause from Moshe to Rebbe, there was no one together with Torah greatness. Now we're adding a third one, or next link, from Rebbe to Ravashi. To Ravashi, there was no one with Torah and greatness together. So now this is your trivia question. Because everyone knows the first half, but the second half people don't say over. So now you know to... No, that's a different one. That's on the stone of the Rambam. So whoever made the stone on the Rambam,
stone?
Yeah, if you go to Tveria, yeah, at the grave of the Rambam, Mi Moshe ad Moshe lo kam kamosha.
Oh, okay.
From Moshe to Moshe, there hasn't come anybody like Moshe. I don't know who wrote that. I'm not saying it was a non-scholar, but it wasn't someone from the Gemara.
Obviously.
Right? It makes sense, but again, you know, I don't know if it carries the weight of a statement of the Talmud. it's an epitaph. It's a statement of the Talmud is mamish, that's it. It's a word of Hashem. A tombstone, okay. I guess, you know, the Sfardim felt very strongly that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Rambam was a great person. No question, he was a great person. Could be also they maybe mean it in terms of, remember, the Rambam wrote his Sefer called it Mishneh Torah. And if you look in the introduction to Mishneh Torah, the Rambam says you only need the five books of Moses and my book. You don't need anything else. You don't need the Gemara. Not that he's dissing it. He says for the masses who can't learn so much, if you learn the Chumash and you learn my book, then you'll have everything you need to know. So that's also part from Moshe to Moshe. He codified what the Torah has to say. But I don't think even that statement means to say that he was had Torah, and certainly I don't know if he had authority. He did not. He was subject to the king of Egypt. So that's a different meaning. Okay, end of this little easy sugya. We move on now to the next part of the Mishnah, where now we move to the second part. Dinei nefashos mischila min hatzad. But capital cases do not go from the most, but from the side, from the least imminent. Moore wants to know, what's the source for that? Minohani Mili, from where do we learn that when we do capital cases, we start from the lower person? Omer Rav Acha bar Papa, Rav Acha, the son of Papa, says, Omer Kra, the Torah says the following statement. It says, Lo sa'ane al riv, do not respond to an argument. Okay, what's the actual pasuk talking about? I remember Shelley. Right, do not, let's look at the context. Lo siya achare rabim rosh, do not be a follower of the majority for evil, and do not respond to a grievance by yielding to the majority to pervert the law. So the simple pshat means, if there's a majority of people who are perverting things, don't give in to them. Don't follow them, don't even respond to them. That's the simple pshat. However, he's going to learn like this. The word, one more time. One second. Look how it's spelled. I was a little too quick on that. Losana. Look, how is the word reeve spelled in Hebrew? Reeve. Losana al reeve. How is it spelled? Resh beis. See that? I can't tile it. It's the second Hebrew line, right under the diamond. Now, how should the word reeve be spelled? But a yud, reev, e, should have a yud. The word reev, everywhere else in the Torah, by Avram Avinu, when him and his shepherds were fighting with Lot's shepherds. Al no say reev, beinu beinecha. Let there not be an argument. Over there, the word reev, it biblically should be spelled with a yud. That's the proper way. When the word, you have the e sound should have a yud, to make it clear. Here, so now, how could I, without knowing what the text is, how would I normally look at those two letters and read it? Rav. So that's hinting to me that we can make a drasha, lo sana al Rav. Do not respond to the Rebbe, to the most important person. So now we're going to see that. That's where I have room to make a drasha, because the word Rav is spelled deficiently. So now, Omar Kra, the pasuk says, lo sana al Rav. But the writing means, the way it's written, it says, Losana al Rav, do not respond to a master. So what does that mean? Do not respond. Don't dispute his words. Now, how could you not dispute them? Therefore, should the preeminent judge be asked to express his view first, he might argue for conviction. Then the less eminent judge would not contradict his view to argue for acquittal. You see what's going on? It says, Losana al Rav, don't answer the bigger rabbi. If the bigger rabbi says he's guilty, then they're finished. Nobody can say anything. Numuki Yosef explains that this cannot mean that a lesser judge is not permitted to contradict the view of the most eminent judge. In fact, the opposite is true. Even the disciple is required to contradict his teacher to argue for exoneration of the accused. Rather, the concern is that the less eminent judge will be apprehensive about contradicting the view of the most eminent judge. Hence, the Torah indicates that trial should be held in a way that will prevent the judge from being placed in that position. This can be accomplished by having less eminent judges state the verse. Which lo sana al Rav, don't create a situation where the guy has to argue on the Rav, and then he'll feel withdrawn from doing that. Okay, so that's what it means. So that's the source why we, but capital cases, we start from the side. Rav Abba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Bar Chana says, I have a different pasuk, a different source. Mehacha, from here. Look what it says. Vayomer David la Noshav. David said to his men, "Chi gru ish es charbo. Let every man gird his sword." Okay. Now the question is, in what order did they gird their swords? So, who do you think, when it says now, and they girded, who should gird? Who should say first, David or the soldiers? David says, "Let's gird our swords." Now it's going to tell you they did it. So, how would you think they should write it? And blank girded their swords. How would you fill in the blanks? What? Yeah, but what would you think?
Follow the example of the leader.
Well, you'd figure it should be, and David and the men girded their, that's what you think. That's not what it's going to say. Ve'yachru ish escharbo, each man girded his sword. Ve'gam David escharbo, and also David guarded his sword. What was this all about? This is a story with Naval. Remember when David and his men did free service to watch the sheep of Naval? They helped him out for a long time, and then it was the big shearing ceremony, and Lovell was raking in the dough. And David sent some men, maybe he could help us, give us a little bit for the party, for us to have something to eat. and Neville said, get out of here, not interested in you. So David and his group made it, we'll call an ad hoc Beis Din, because I'm sure not all the people in David's group were worthy of being on a Sanhedrin. But anyway, David convened his own ad hoc Beis Din, and they decided what they should do to deal with Neville's unkindness. So he said, you know, we're going to take our swords. We're going to do what we got to do to get what we got to get. So David kind of like, so now they got to say, okay, what are we going to do? So to vote, the vote to execute is described, what was the vote? By the verse and the phrase, every man girded his sword. He says, okay, let's do it. Let's vote, guys. So everybody took their sword out. Then David, as if to say, he let the others vote first before he voted. So that's more of a, so the first one is playing on a word that's spelled deficiently. Second one is an actual story with David HaMelech. Okay.
Taking out the sword was a vote.
Yeah, we vote, you know, what should we do?
And then people voting
should we go after him or not? So they all take their swords out. They say, we vote that we should go and persuade him. Amar Rav, says Rav. Now, a related ruling, Amar Rav. Shoyna Odom L'Talmido. A person may teach his disciple a law regarding some aspect of a capital case and judge it along with him. In other words, the judge, even though he's teaching the student something that's relevant to this case, they can still both vote, even though you think it's not really two separate votes. It kind of being the student's just echoing the vote of the teacher. We'd think if he's teaching him how to vote, it really shouldn't be a vote. It's just like repeating one vote twice. That's what it says. Even though the teacher is just now teaching his disciple the law relevant to the case at hand and announces the law causes the disciple to alter his view of the case, the disciple is nevertheless counted as an independent vote for acquittal or conviction like any other judge. And that's a shtickle chiddush. You'd think maybe it's just a repetition. So he's saying, no, it's considered like a separate vote. Gemara now is going to ask a question on that statement. Meisavei, Gemara asks, we have, it says, Hataharas Vatmeis. What did our Mishnah say? I think it's a bright, whatever. In cases of Tum and Tahara, who can judge over here? Ha'av Ubeno, a father and his son. Harav Talmido, a rabbi and his student. Monim Lohem are counted as Shnayim, as two votes, two independent votes. Why? Because basically a lone judge is all that's needed to rule. When we're dealing with Tumah and Torah, really one judge is enough. But we have three, but one could be enough. So it's only that when there's a dispute as to the law that a vote must be taken to determine which view should prevail. Therefore, the views of a father and a son or teacher and his disciple may be counted as two separate votes because it really can get away with one. But now here's the point that's important, though. Dine mamonas v'dine fashes. What about monetary cases and capital cases? V'dine makas and lashes? Or kiddush shachodesh, or deciding to sanctify the month? V'ibur shonar, to intercalate the year? But what's most important is what we're looking for is capital cases, because that's what we're talking about. Avu b'no, a father and son. Harav etalmido, a rebbe and a student. Ain monin lohen ela echad. They're only counted as one vote. So we see that they're not considered like two votes. Right? So similarly, the views of a teacher and disciple are counted only as one vote because we assume the disciple's opinion is going to be a reflection of the teacher. Okay? So, and these are all cases that have to have a specific amount of judges. We're not going to go through the details, so it seems to be a problem. Going up to the next page. So, the Gemara answers, Ki kama Rav, when Rav made that statement, Kigon Rav Kahana Ravasi. He's speaking about a Rebbe and a student like Rav Kahana and Ravasi, those kinds of students. Why is that? Dilegamre de Rav Havitzrichi, who need only the information of the Rav, of the information, but they don't need the logic. Sometimes, in other words, the Rebbe has to give you a little bit information, so based on information, you know how to rule. But he's not telling you how to rule. It's not giving you logic of how to look at things. So speaking about, let's say, a Rav and a Talmud like Rav Kahan and Rav Asi, who only needed the information of Rav, but Ulesvare de Rav, but for the logic, the reasoning skills, Lo Havitzarchi. They did not need it. That's the kind of say we're saying when the Rav lets him know a little information. It's not reasoning information, but technical information. In other words, Rav stated above that the opinions of a disciple and his teachers are counted as two independent votes in capital cases. Werner now explains that this statement applies only to a disciple whose deductive skills are fully developed. Thus, even though he obtains his Torah knowledge from his teacher, who had in turn received that knowledge from his own teacher, the disciple nevertheless considers the validity of the information as pertinent to the case at hand on his own. Consequently, the disciple's decision is an independent opinion, not a direct result of his teacher's opinion, since he would have arrived at the same decision even if he had acquired that information from another teacher. This principle can be proven from the Sanhedrin of Moshe that met in the wilderness. Isn't that interesting? Although all 70 other members of that court received their turnouts from Moshe, they still were able to judge cases. How could that be? In other words, there's teaching Torah that you could get it from anybody. It's just the obvious information. So if a Rebbe teaches you the obvious information, that doesn't mean that you're going to think his way. But there's another, you know, let's say when you go to yeshiva, let's say when a guy, Bucher, decides to go on yeshiva, well, I want to go to Brisk. You know, why do I want to go to Brisk? Because Brisk not just only gives you information, there's a way that they analyze things. Now, that's already different. That they analyze things a particular way. So you can go to yeshiva where they just give you the facts. And there's yeshiva where they give you the facts, but we want, this is how we teach you to interpret the facts. So Moshe and the Sanhedrin, Moshe just gave him the Torah, but he didn't teach him how to interpret the facts. Therefore, they still could be judges. And with this one, Rav says that a Rebbe and a student can judge the case when the Rebbe just gave him straight out facts. But still, the student has his own intuitive mind that can still make decisions. The Braisa, though, which does not consider disciples appear to be independent of his teachers, is referring to the disciple who is dependent on his teacher for reasoning skills as well. It is then understandable that a disciple's opinion is considered to be based entirely on his teacher's view, as not counted as an independent view for a case where it is necessary to have a specified number of judges. So that becomes the difference. Is he just learning information, or is he getting ability to understand how to assimilate information? That's only considered one vote. Okay, we're going to stop it right over there. Maybe if you could email it to me, yeah, or whatever. I don't know how it works.